Welcome to Share Talk, the only podcast where investors come first.
Hello and welcome to Share Talk. It's a Sunday roast again. I'm not sure whether it's the third or the fourth, but we're here. We've survived. We've had the trolling on social media. We've had the adulation as well. We've had everything over the last 3 or 4 weeks. It's been quite a journey. As usual, I'm going to start off with Phil Carroll, who is, you know, he's the boss in terms of the markets, as he'll tell you, no doubt, in this next segment. But how's your week been, Phil?
Good afternoon, Zach. Yeah, thanks very much. But it's been a really good week, actually, to be honest. I'll start with the first stock that I actually alluded to last week, which was VLRM, Valerian Blockchain. And they've had a really, really good week. They've moved from, I think, what they closed last Friday around the 11 pence mark, and they moved up. They hit a high of around 43 pence. So it's been a really buoyant market. There's been a lot of the volume has suddenly increased, and again that was probably down to the last RNS that came out that talked about an association with Kayaduka Corporation in the US and their cryptocurrency mining operation that's being set up. So yeah, fantastic week on that. There's been a few other movers. I'll let Kevin allude more to things like RMM, but other than that, it's been a pretty strong week. Actually, there's one other thing. Is there anybody else that could maybe add a bit more information on Valerian Matora, you know, potentially?
I don't think we've got anybody who really knows the company that well, but we'll try. I mean, we've got a guest here this week who might know a little bit more than us, let's put it that way. It's Richard Polden, who's chairman of Valerian Blockchain, and he's also actually in his spare time CEO of Wishbone Gold. So it's two for the price of one, and one for the price of two, and all for one, and one for all. So, Richard, maybe you can start off with correcting all Phil's schoolboy errors regarding your company.
Good evening, sir. Good evening, Phil. I don't think they're schoolboy errors at all. I think I like Phil's enthusiasm. Stepping back slightly, this is suddenly a tremendously hot sector. If you think it's exciting in London, you should look more at the US and see what's happening over there. I kind of think that America gets this in a way that London doesn't at this stage. The fundamental point is that I think the whole crypto markets are coming of age. And I think that people don't quite get just how much money is washing around out there. So let's start with that. The cryptos, excluding derivatives, depending on the price of Bitcoin, blah, 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 about 1.6 trillion. And you'll correct me on the precise numbers here, Zach, but I think I'm right in saying that there are 10 stock exchanges worth over $1 trillion. So that's, you know, New York, London, Tokyo, et cetera. But the point is that this is like having another entire New York stock exchange plus NASDAQ sitting out there trading away from conventional currencies. And they're trading all kinds of things. They're trading Bitcoin as a store of value. They're using Bitcoin as a currency to buy assets. Some of those are crypto assets with the non-fungible tokens. We've seen the sale of the first 5,000 days by Beetle, which was phenomenal. I mean, watching the end of that auction, because they closed it at lunchtime in New York, it started that morning at $13 million and closed when whatever it was, at $68 million. And so many people have said to me, oh, it's stupid, you know, it's digital art. I said, yeah, I remember being told it was stupid to buy paintings of soup cans done by a man. And what does he mean by taking a photograph of Marilyn Monroe and then painting an image of the photograph and turning it into an artwork? I mean, how can that possibly be called art? So I think that this is a new, absolutely new area, and there'll be floods of money going into crypto space. But equally, I think what you'll see is you'll see much more of a crossover between the fiat world and the crypto world. So you've seen Elon Musk go out and buy a slug of Bitcoin for Tesla, and that all of a sudden gives it street cred. It makes it very hard for the regulators now to try and dismiss Bitcoin and its fellows completely.
Yeah.
So it's There is a whole new industry growing up here. Is it a bubble? Yeah, of course it is at the moment. So it will rise, it'll come back, it'll rise again. And the way all of these technology booms move. But it's here to stay. That's the point.
Yeah. One of the things that really got the sort of spider senses tingling, Richard, was the mention on one of the RNSs that Vinay Gupta was involved in, was in some sort of capacity as a non-exec. Yeah. And could you give us a little bit of sort of how you come to, were introduced to him and is this, and what he's actually helping with the coin and think, you know, a bit more information
certainly,
on that?
Certainly, I'm very happy to do that. Vinay is a very old friend of mine. So we've known each other for many years. We've talked about these markets. We also enjoy lots of time discussing philosophy, stone circles, ley lines, energy centers, and so on. Vinay was one of the founders of Ethereum, launched the marketing of Ethereum, and so knows the crypto space better than pretty much anyone. And his current company, Materium, has launched a series of NFTs linked to Star Trek memorabilia that he's launched with Bill Shatner. And what is different about Materium's NFTs from just the casual NFT that is stuck out there is that they are all covered with what Vinay calls the Materium Asset Passport. So every item that is linked to a Materium-issued NFT is covered by an insurance wrap package that verifies that it's correct, all of the provenance and so on. So that on its own can change the way all artwork is traded. So because we were looking at two areas with Valerium blockchain, we're looking at NFT-related areas where we might list securities and derivatives of securities using quasi-NFTs. Vinay's expertise comes into that very well. We've said that we're looking at a range of opportunities in the crypto market. And we're definitely, you're quite right, said we're looking at the NFT space and securities tokens, yes.
Yeah. So the derivative tokens that was announced, so the idea is you can trade derivatives through them in the forms of fiat currencies. I mean, how can you talk us through how you could use something to kind
sure.
of...
Sure, yes. Let's think about that for a moment. There are various tokens that trade. There's Tether, USDT, USDC, that trade linked to the price of US dollars, and they are used as exchangeable media into fiat currencies. You also have derivatives of fiat currencies, Apple, Tesla being good examples, that are traded on Bittrex in Bermuda. We have announced that we're talking to Bittrex, and I don't see any particular reason why that market shouldn't expand hugely. Mm. What I hope is that we're not the only company doing it, because if it's one or two companies involved, then that's where the regulators pounce and say, this is all over and we don't like it. If it's one or 200 companies involved, I'd much prefer that, because then all we have to be is one of the best.
Yeah. Okay, understood.
That would enable, let me give you an example. If you assume that you have a crypto derivative of a fiat currency trading on crypto exchanges, they're cheaper, faster, 24/7, and anyone can trade on them. So you could have a Chinese in Hong Kong buying Nigerian debt because he thinks that's good at that moment in time. So you could introduce a whole new level of liquidity to the world markets.
Yeah, makes sense. So another question regarding, and this is something that I saw off the back of Argo blockchain, when once they got the OTC market listing, that was a kind of a parabolic rise from mm-hmm. a very good level, but obviously that really sort of moved them on to the next step.
Yeah.
How long would an OTC list, I don't want a timescale, but you know, just a general kind of guess of how long it would take generally to list on the OTC market?
Right. What we're talking about, there are sort of three levels of the OTC markets. There are the pink sheets at the bottom, then you've got OTCQB, which is the equivalent of the old bulletin board, and then you've got OTCQX, which is kind of the senior part of those, that group of exchanges. The pink sheets you can list very quickly because you're not actually listing. It's simply a market maker who makes a market in your stock. And they can make a market without your permission. It's not going to stop anybody.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be wonderful if we had a market like that in London? Brilliant. Anyway, OTCQB, you need a broker sponsor. You have to make various filings. And then whoever your sponsor is has exclusivity on trading your stock for a month. And then everyone can pile in.
Yeah.
So basically, the timetable, assuming that everything is lined up for your company and your perfect regulatory order, then that'll take about 3 weeks to put the filing together. Then it'll be another month. So okay.
That's and you've engaged Galanopoulos and company to
we have indeed. Yeah. We have indeed.
Good.
Nico is qualified in all of North America in different aspects. He's a barrister in New York.
Yeah, I think he helped Shinju get there. Is helping Shinju with a listing as well.
He's pretty well known, and he's a great guy to work with.
All right, so I just wanted to ask one question to Richard, which I'm not quite sure whether you answered it, because his questions are a bit all over the place. But to me, it seems the unique part of Valerium is that it bridges the two worlds, and that bridge is its own. I mean, it's the first company to do that. Is that the right understanding of where you're coming from?
That's one of the aspects of our strategy, yes, that it is, our objective is to bridge the two worlds. It's also very important that we are a Gibraltar PLC. Our registered office is in Gibraltar. And as a result, we are regulated by the Gibraltar Financial Services Commission. That's a big difference from anyone based in London, where you have the FCA and less than helpful attitude to crypto.
Right, so you're in a good jurisdiction. I was, again, implying by the question that because there's hardly anybody else bridging those two, you know, those two worlds, and especially the new massive world. I mean, they're almost the same size, let's say, in yeah. some areas. You could be a unique link or a unique broker or a unique mechanism between the two.
You're absolutely right, Zach. Though I would reiterate what I've said. I hope that we're not, because you need more than one person to make a market.
Right, okay, I get it.
I simply want to be one of the best in that market group. The other thing is, if we have a number of companies doing it, that will generate more liquidity, more interest in the market. I mean, it'd be like having one broker for the London Stock Exchange. I mean, that's not actually going to help everybody.
Yes, exactly. Yes. All right. So that's an interesting. No, I get that.
One last question. And then I obviously appreciate you may not be able to answer. So just tell me off. If cash position, how are things? Obviously, there's been a lot of speculation on the usual social media or Twitter platform saying that obviously the share price has risen. Now would be a good time to obviously issue some sort of raise or placing to help fund the crypto mining and things like that. Do you think there's, I mean, is there anything on the cards? Could we see that? Or
oh, Phil, thank you so much for that question, because I always love this. It's Tom Winifred's favorite question, where it's what I call the animal farm view of corporate finance. Because if you remember Animal Farm, in the end, the animals come down to simplifying the whole thing by saying four legs good, two legs bad. And Tom's view of the world is no placings good, all placings bad.
Yeah.
Whereas actually, the reason for being in the public markets is actually to finance companies.
Correct.
We don't have any immediate plans for a placing. I'm perfectly happy to come out and say that. Again, it's an interesting argument about how much it costs to start a company and how much you have to spend. And if you contrast a modern tech company where you can outsource a huge amount of the expertise required, you can outsource a lot of the technology required and so on today, you can get a perfectly reasonable business going for a few hundred thousand. If you contrast that with Wishbone Gold, you cannot get a reasonable mining business going for a few hundred thousand. It just won't happen. And I think despite the huge advances in technology, and the rapid advances in software, people haven't sort of grasped how cheap it is to start some of these businesses nowadays.
No, I think that's a perfectly valid answer. I think that if people see a raise in as a company comes forward, issues a placing, dilutes the company, takes, you know, takes a lifestyle salary out of it, and then doesn't, you don't hear from them for a year, and you know, there's no update, then they see that as being, you know, the wrong way to do it. But if you're doing it and you're putting, it's laying out a plan of, we want to use it for these funds, you know, working capital, marketing, to actually get the product moving and actually start the crypto mining and the, you know, and the series of derivative coins or tokens, then there's not a problem with that.
No, but I would still make the point that you know, you can start technology businesses on far, far lower capital investment.
Of course,
Which is a point that people often miss.
Thank you.
Another question, which may be not quite so, I suppose, detailed. Richard, I think we've known you since the summer with Wishbone Gold, and we've known you with Valerium. You got off to a flyer with both these companies. Pretty impressive. Have you been doing anything different in the last 6 to 9 months that you weren't doing before, maybe?
Yeah, I have actually, because I had a stroke in 2018. And so, because I'm me, I carried on as if nothing had happened, which wasn't a very smart thing to do, actually. So, in fact, actually coming out of that and getting back to where I always used to be is something different.
And the other point, I suppose, that leads on from that is that you see you've got the mining expertise, and now you've got the, I said the blockchain, we'll call it blockchain, but you've got, you know, it's a total cutting edge. It's the opposite of mining. That's why it's called crypto mining. It's the opposite. It's the total opposite. But you're, you know, it's like being a polymath. You're an expert in art. You're an expert in maths. I mean, it's or in history. I mean, it's one of those things that it's very rare that you have people who are knowledgeable in totally contrasting areas. And obviously you're a lawyer too, which is, I don't count that because that's not a very well rated pursuit.
Well, I try to keep that from everyone except my closest friends. But I think that with the most businesses, a lot of it is fundamental. It's a rate of return, and it's a return to all the shareholders basically. But you know, I did get the first ever digital PBX designed and built in Britain through type approval a long time ago, back in the 80s. So actually, I do have a background in technology. So and I tend to stick to natural resources and technology. It's not absolutely everything.
And just a broader question as well. Do you think that we're at the foothills of what, you know, the crypto area and the whole technology area? Is it something we look back and laugh and say that was like an Atari, or that was like a this, or wasn't Bitcoin quaint? I mean, where are we on the scale? Is it something which is a wild new frontier, or will something, you know, replace it in 5 years' time? What do you think?
Well, Zach, you and I have talked about the shortening of technology cycles and financial cycles in the past, and I won't repeat that, and I think everybody knows that. These cycles are getting shorter, they're happening faster. I would say that what is absolutely here to stay in one form or another is the blockchain technology, and that there will be other things that are derivatives of that. Will it always be computers doing mining as they're doing on Bitcoin and Ethereum at the moment? No, it probably won't. Bitcoin will come to an end because there will only be a finite number of coins minted. Ethereum has already announced that they're moving away from the mining model. That'll probably take them a couple of years to do so. So you're going to see change, constant changes like that within the industry, and that will change the competitive landscape. Will people invent new things that the four of us tonight can't think of? Yeah, of course they will. That's the nature of a technology shift like this. And you can't have a fluid $1.6 trillion sitting outside the system and not expect something to grow from that. It will. It'll be invested, new things will be designed, and new activities will be thought of.
Richard, sorry to butt in there. So I've been looking on, it came up on Facebook actually, and outside of the box with the blockchain technology, I saw something come up and it said Earth 2. And I was trying to understand and get my head around what that actually meant, Earth 2. But it looks like these tokens and so on, these non-fungible tokens, could potentially be used. So say when they built this Earth 2, which is a virtual Earth, your house will exist on this virtual Earth. Buckingham Palace will exist on this virtual Earth. And you can buy these virtual assets as kind of a boasting status. So you can just see it coming in the future, rather than you can own a virtual property. It's like a game of Monopoly. but you can then actually sell that.
I saw that as well, Albert, but it's not a new idea. Second Life has been out there for donkey's years.
But I can see it coming to life this time. I mean, I didn't know about that. I've written a lot of code in my life. I've actually coded blockchain myself, and the technology, the distributed ledger, it's absolutely amazing. It's really good tech, especially when we're talking about JP Morgan moving trillions of dollars around each day. It makes it a lot easier for them to do that. But I could see this virtual asset thing picking up in the future, really could. Like a game of Monopoly.
Well, my point is that it's already picked up in the sort of games world.
Yeah.
You have completely, I mean, I'm not an expert in this, I'm afraid, but what is it? World of Warcraft is the big online multiplayer game. And it's a complete fantasy game. Whereas Second Life is buildings and people and so on. And, you know, building nice beaches and so on. And I remember a long time ago writing an article of, when people were criticizing these and saying it'll never take off, nobody will ever do it. And I took a screenshot of an avatar lying on a beach in Second Life, and I captioned it, you know, where would you rather be, in a bedsit in Birmingham, Alabama in winter, or on a beach in Second Life? It's a relatively easy choice as far as I was concerned. So yeah, the virtual worlds will take off and people will use them and play games and have fun with them.
The King's New Clothes. Anybody want a set?
Well, so you're not impressed, Kevin?
No, I think it's real, but it's still the King's New Clothes. You know, the reality is a lot of it doesn't exist in reality.
Yeah, but you can say that about money in a bank, can't you? Yeah. This is the thing that always gets me. The entire world is run from a digital economy. They might print money, but ultimately you get paid digitally. It goes into your digital bank where you make digital PayPal payments for, you know, whatever you want to buy via PayPal or whatever credit card you use. So it's this digital world.
The only time
I use coins is when I pay the guy that cleans the bin out that comes around a couple of days a week. He wants the £2 coins.
What percentage
I don't doubt it's happening. Is this going to continue to happen? I think.
Does anybody know? I warn you, it's a trick question.
It's a fiat currency that is there only to service debt.
But no, what percentage of the world currency is actually fiat? Is actually paper and coins?
I would say 0.1%, maybe.
Sorry? Less.
0.1%.
You're sort of close in a funny kind of way. The answer is that actually nobody knows, but it's generally thought to be between 12-14%. That's why it's a trick question. And the question there is, do you include the American $1,000 bill, which was theoretically taken out of circulation 15-18 years ago? But they still circulate in order to finance drug deals. Because if somebody says, well, this is worth $1,000, and Zach accepts that it's worth $1,000, then why wouldn't he hand over the cocaine in exchange for the $1,000 bill?
I've just got a quick question on that, Richard. And obviously, being in the gold space, I think you could probably answer. I'm a precious metals man. I like my gold and silver. And obviously, with the velocity of the dollar, you know, basically, it's there's so much, you know, the dollar and even the pound is so diluted these days. And obviously, with all the fiscal stimulus and all the massive the printing, hyperstagflation, as they refer to it as in the US, obviously, gold has had a little bit of a re-rate, sort of from 1800 up to the $2,000, and maybe a little hovered around, and then it obviously dropped back. Silver had a little bit of a spike, but all the money, all the sort of hedge against inflation money that we would have seen normally in a kind of market downturn or in, say, a global pandemic that we're in, you would have expected money to have moved maybe into the precious metal sector, hasn't. And it's all potentially gone into the other industry you're in, you know, into the actual Bitcoin industry, which again is now become the new hedge against inflation, where people are kind of putting their it's a hedge, isn't it? Do you think gold and silver will have the day again, or do you think we've seen that's it, people have just, that, you know, they're unloved now, there's a new kid on the block, and that's the Bitcoin, that's the crypto?
No, I think there's an element that's a new kid on the block, but you're never going to see the disappearance of gold as a store of value. It's been a store of value for centuries. It's in relatively limited supply. It has lots of unique qualities compared to other metals, that it doesn't tarnish, it doesn't deteriorate, and so on. And you have an entire industry around the world devoted to putting serial numbers on bars of gold and storing them and transferring them. So yeah. No, I don't think that is going to change. What will alter is that there are a couple of really good launches coming up of crypto derivatives linked to gold, where the gold is stored in a vault and you have a crypto derivative that trades against that specific bar.
Yeah.
Look at AUAG, for example.
Yeah, okay.
But isn't it the case that with the, I mean, look, turning it the other way around, with the crypto arguably sucking out 1.2 trillion or 1.6 trillion, whatever it is, of liquidity, if there had been no crypto, that money probably would have gone into precious metals. Is that an argument that you might espouse? And then let's say if that situation changed, then people might then go back to gold. I mean, I would have thought, if we'd had a conversation 10 years ago, and we'd had a discussion of where gold would be in 10 years' time, if we'd had X amount of QE and then X trillions of liquidity pumped into the markets, this, that, and the other, you would have said that gold would now be in 2021 at least $10,000. I mean, I'm sure you would say it was $10,000 by now, because
Standard & Chartered actually did say that. I still have a copy of the document in which they wrote that. So that was indeed the figure. I think it's, people have got inflation wrong. I think that they've certainly, $1.6 trillion, isn't that what the US printed last week?
Yeah.
You know, it's very difficult to get a feel on where those values are going to move to. But I would maintain what I said just now, that I don't see the disappearance of gold as a store of value. I really don't. The industrial use is a minor compared to silver. Silver and copper obviously have a big role in the electric car madness, but gold has a minor role there, but it'll still be a store of value, Zach. The others will simply move alongside it.
Yeah, I mean, there's two points there. I suppose if there was a wobble in they banned cryptos or holding cryptos tomorrow, then presumably the gold price would have a rather nice re-rate. The negative effect on gold, which I don't think people have talked about enough, which, well, they might not believe it, but I think the internet has been the greatest source of deflation and continues to be so, because it's price transparency. And once you let that price transparency genie out of the bottle about 10, 12 years ago, it was much more difficult to have inflation. We have massive inflation where you can't have, when there's pricing power, there's massive inflation, probably more than there's ever been. But in most areas, you can see, if you can check on Google what the price of a packet of crisps are, then there isn't. There's an orderly inflation.
Well, yes, except also the items that are used to measure inflation have been incorrect. So we all know that the price of the new car has gone up. We know that house prices have gone up, or the price of a house we want to buy has gone up, and so on. And the fact that the price of a bottle of ketchup and a bag of crisps and a loaf of Hovis in the North Country has stayed the same and tells you inflation is only 1.5% is absolutely ludicrous. So the parameters have just been altered for a publicity point of view.
So would that mean that, you know, if you know, you personally, or you would feel that one should be, say, hoarding precious metals, but having a good chunk of precious metals, and maybe the more mad the crypto area gets, or the more mad the stock market or SPACs or whatever else there is gets, that's more, it's an indication it's the time to buy precious metals.
Definitely. I mean, let me reiterate, Zach, I have obviously holdings of gold directly as metal. I've got my holdings in Wishbone, and I'm also very keen on silver at the moment.
Yeah, thanks very much again, Richard, and good luck with the ventures.
Thanks, Richard.
Thank you. Really appreciate it, Richard. Thank you.
Cheers, Richard.
Well, thank you. Thanks, guys. Have a good weekend.
Bye. Yep. God bless. Bye-bye.
Cheers. Have a really good one. Thanks for that, Richard. It was really interesting.
All right. So should we go on to Kevin's week? Have you bought back into Siamese? Yep.
You gonna what? Sorry.
Have you bought back into Siamese yet?
No.
You're supposed to say yes. We rehearsed that many times.
I'm sorry. It has just about risen above where I sold it. I think maybe somewhere in the region. I sold for what? 41.6, 42. So no, I'm glad it rose back up after having a bit of a a wobbler. So good luck to all those people. Thanks, by the way, to the guys that chucked me out of the SYME group on Telegram. That was very, very adult of you.
Well, why would you want to be in a group when you don't own the shares? I mean, why would you want to be there? I mean, I think it was just they've got so many people in there, you know, it's getting crowded. So they have to like decide who to throw out of the, you know, out of the club. And it's a very
exclusive. Yeah, I think the boys in the playground decided. Halas, Kevin's goodbye.
I hope that when you buy the shares again at £3, then you know they'll let you. So
okay, anyway, this week, RMM, Rambler Metals and Mining, happy days, 25% up, now 0.468. And I promised the guys in the group that it's only just begun.
I close my eyes
it's only just begun.
Oh, wait a minute, the cats have started screaming, the local neighborhood cats are off.
Okay, so it's only just begun. We've only just started. 1p is not far away. I think the volume this week was immense on RMM. We got rid of Lombard, I think, on Wednesday. They sold 1 billion shares over the last 3 weeks. And yeah, the only way is up. Who sang that one? I can't remember.
Yaz.
Yaz and the...
Plastic Population.
And the Plastic Population, indeed. So this week, negative week, but actually I feel my portfolio is in a really good position. Great RNS from Zoetic, is it?
Cracking. It was a cracking RNS. You can't say great. That's the wrong adjective.
All right, sorry. Cracking RNS. A bit like pork crackling, but cracking RNS from Zoetic. Or Zoetic. It was Zoetic. Today.
Okay, that's right. Just checking.
It's a great RNS, and I'm still very happy to say that I think there'll be £4 to £5 by the end of the year. And yes, I'll be very happy when this all happens. Portfolio down. Didn't trade too much, which was good. And actually, I've decided I'm going on a diet next week. No trading at all. Zero trades next week.
But diet. Well,
I'm going to do
a trading diet, not a diet diet.
Well, no, I need to do one of those as well, I have to say. But
yeah, that's why we've got it all on audio, not video, because we just, you know, we're trying to spare people's blushes.
I mean, yeah. I can't talk. But you,
no, literally,
Kev, it looks like you've got more than a.
You can't say that anymore.
Well, you can edit that one out.
No, we have to edit that one out.
Kevin, I've got a low carb diet. Don't worry, mate. Them chins will go in no time.
If I do this, I have one chin.
Yeah, at least you got hair anyway. That's the main thing. I mean,
who gives look at that beautiful hair.
Exactly. Huh? Yeah.
Wow. Look at it. And I was in the swimming pool for the first time today. 32 degrees. It's going to be 40 degrees tomorrow, so all good. Anyway, that's my week. Nothing more, much more exciting.
All right. So, Albert, anything to report?
I've just taken a step back from the markets. I've mowed my lawn, got my barbecue ready. My markets are a little bit fragile at the minute. You've got this Bitcoin bubble stuff going on. You've got the Coinbase getting loaded, ARB dropping down, KR1 dropping down. And to be honest, I've been watching stuff I don't hold this week because I've thought about taking some new positions. But with the current market turbulence at the moment, I'm thinking of ideas, but I can't find anything out there just yet. So I've cut the lawn, got everything ready, and I'm hoping to do some big trades in that fresh grass in the near distant future. But and also waiting for things to come in because I'm holding a lot of things at the minute with big news in the pipeline and I funded companies and. My week's not been bad. A couple of them have dropped back a bit. Some of them have gone up. But every now and then you take that step back, and I've probably had a step back for the last 3 weeks. Did one trade last week. This week I've not done any trades. I can't really judge where the market's going. I'm still very bio bull on the market. But, I mean, I don't know if you saw about the surge testing that's coming in and then the new variants and all of this. So, I mean, it's a bit... like, you know, I'm not, which way is it going to go? But I'm still very viable.
Hold on a sec. You got the FTSE above 7,000. today. I mean, and Dow, et cetera, at record highs. I mean, what stock market are you looking at?
Well, yeah, well, I'm not looking at the stock market. I'm looking at my holdings, and I'm trying to find things that can go up more than them. So, yeah, the FTSE goes up and goes down, and, you know, these waves and trends come. But unless there's a better idea out there than what I'm already holding, then why would I sell what I hold to buy something else? And, yeah, it's great when the FTSE goes up, but it'll probably go down next week because of the, you know, the surge testing and all of this stuff coming in and out. You've got travel and leisure going up one week, down the next, and then all of a sudden there's a new variant surge testing in a part of London where everyone's got to get... And you know, it's going to spread around the country like it did last time. That's how it feels to me anyway. So it's kind of long positions being taken in short-term circumstances.
No, so, I mean, is there a scenario, let's say that the blue chips keep going up, do you think that'll trickle down to the small caps? Is that what's happening at the moment?
I think it's a stock pick a small cap market, in my eyes, for the next 18 months.
Okay.
That's the way I see it. And I think the FTSE will go up and down. The Dow will go up and down. Bitcoin, no idea what that's going to do. It's so binary. I mean, all it takes is a new thing like Coinbase getting loaded onto the exchange. And then all the investors that are in these ARBs and these KR1s and other blockchain and Bitcoin tech, they all jump to it thinking it's going to, you know, bubble and balloon. And it's just hard. You don't know where to put it, do you? And that's, well, I don't touch any of that stuff anyway. But I've been watching it. I'm quite interested in watching it.
Does it not make you want to think, actually, I might start touching that? You know what
no,
I mean?
No, I touched it in the past. And I was awake. I was setting my alarm to do a trade at 3 o'clock in the morning. I was following the global community go around the trading circle. You've got us trading it. Asia wakes up. The Yanks wake up, back to us. You don't know which sentiment's going to be in which part of the world. I don't want to be trading. I mean, I know you probably do because you're up all night, Phil.
No,
the man that doesn't sleep. But
I actually meant not just crypto, like actual pure.
Oh, right.
I meant sort of stuff, you know, within like what you stocks within the blockchain sector.
I'm interested in, Richard, he gave a really good explanation of, you know, what was going on in that space. And my mind's opened up a little bit in that space because it's not just the crypto side of things, which is very binary. If you can get a company that's dependent on its own revenue through its own blockchain, that'll be a game changer. But if you've got a company that's driving off sentiment going up and down, that's not an investment for me. It's panic trading. Everyone buys it, it goes up. Everyone sells it, it goes down. That's not an investment for me. That's a crazy trading, you know, loop. You swing trading again. And the technicals and the charts, there's no fundamentals to make the price move. Musk does a tweet, it goes up. Doesn't send one for 3 weeks, it goes down. So, you know, for me, and I want everyone to make lots of money out of this stuff. But for me, I like to be quite chilled. I like to relax. I like to think of slow ideas over a glass of red wine and buy in steadily and then sell when the time's right. So for me, it's more of it's like a party weekend trading that stuff.
Definitely. I understand that. I mean, as you say, I think the problem with it is because a lot of the companies are pinned to the value of Bitcoin or another coin. As you say, they're just volatile. And you know, Argo blockchain obviously is an example of that. The way it can wildly swing and move in a day, it's phenomenal, really, just how quickly that thing moves. Obviously, pinned to the value, really, because they're mining Bitcoin, pinned to whatever Bitcoin's doing on that said day.
Yeah, but I mean, there's been a lot of pain in that stock. I mean, what is that? What do you think that's about? Is that, you know, they had the placing a few weeks back and it looked like the stock had managed to rebalance itself after that. But it's just, you know, we've had a few bad days now.
Yeah, I mean, it's down to, you know, any daily fluctuations on Bitcoin and it really does mirror it. It's purely pinned to that value. Yes, there's been, obviously, there was a very large placing, wasn't there, announced? NFT investments, they IPO, didn't they? Or listed, sorry, the IPO, but they listed, I believe, on the Aquis today. And I think they started off around the eight pence mark, and then they ended up around, I think, 4.95. So that there was a sudden surge in interest, just like a lot of these shares we see, you know, in the first sort of 20 minutes after the opening bell. and then it just kind of petered out. So there's been quite a few recently of these IPOs that have ended up being just falling flat, and sort of, you know, Deliveroo was another example. I think people are kind of waking up to the fact that an IPO isn't always a good thing, or buying in at IPO levels is not always a good thing, and you're actually probably better off waiting, you know, a day or two or even a week to get your a good decent entry point.
And so, I mean, do you think that it was Richard Polden was talking of, you know, saying, you know, how much money is in the crypto space? Do you think that that's actually draining the money out of the stock market?
I think to a certain extent, yeah. I mean, I think it's around, is it 1.7 trillion or something is the figure for the coins, so, or for the crypto. So, yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of these small-time traders, especially the youngsters who've got access to, you know, you look at apps like Mode, Revolut, or the Challenger Bank apps, where you can literally just deposit some money in, press a button, and you can convert your fiat currency into Ethereum or Bitcoin, whatever coin you want, and it's done simply. Mode is another example. You know, you've spoken to the Mode directors, and that's really gaining traction now, where you've got access via apps, and you can literally do it at the press of a button, and that's what people want. It's the Robin Hood trading mentality, isn't it? And that's driven it, you know, I think someone summed it up to me the other day when they said that people are out, we're telling them about buying these new coins, and the hairdressers were telling them, and for me, as soon as a taxi driver or a hairdresser tells me to buy something, I'm out. I'm done at that point. You know, that's a signal for me that it's reached.
It's the tax. I don't think a lot of people trade and understand the tax implications on there. You start getting big amounts of Bitcoin, and you can't just sell it and just cash it out. You have to pay tax, and you know, it's not like holding the ARB in an ISA or the KR1 in the ISA.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of these newbies, I mean, I know people loaded positions that didn't know anything about tax. They're saying, you know, they've got like 50, 60 grand in it, and that they don't even know that it's not tax free. And for me, it wouldn't benefit me to even go. I mean, I wish I'd 10 bagged ARB, to be honest. I wish I did, but I mean,
that's true, Albert, of even shares. I mean, you know, when GameStop and AMC happened in the US, and there was people making, you know, fortunes overnight on the whole short squeeze thing. Some of the fund managers came on, didn't they, from the funds who were actually, you know, just blatantly massive short positions, were saying, guys, you may be reaping the rewards now, but just make sure you hold some money back for the, you know, for Mr. Taxman, because you really don't understand that you're going to have a very, very hefty bill at the end of this. So, you know, that, as you say, in the US, obviously, I'm not sure of the tax rules, but they certainly do get taxed on any equivalent of a capital gains tax. So true on whether you're in crypto, whether you're on a spread bet or a CFD, for instance, there's going to be some sort of tax implication associated with it. But yeah, I think it really does. Back to answer your question, Zach, it really is down to this kind of, you know, the pandemic has also helped this the boredom factor. People are sat at home, they've got more time on their hands, they can, you know, I'm speaking to guys that would never have invested before that are saying to me, you know, friends going, oh yeah, I've had a 212 account, no problem, I've been doing a few percent on that each week, and I bought into some stocks. And I'm like, really? You always told me that you know, stock markets wasn't for you. And oh yeah, well, you know, a mate told me, and a friend of a friend, and it's just that self-perpetuating thing where more and more people do it. But again, the danger in the US is you hear horror stories of the Robin Hood guys, youngsters, who log in to find that they've opened up a short position, they haven't got the margin, and they've run up $100,000 a day. And then, you know, then you hear of, you know, potentially they commit suicide because they don't understand exactly what they've got themselves into. So it does need regulation in that respect, that anyone can just open up an app and start trading leverage positions, I think.
But Arb, I think it's not exciting enough anymore. These crypto investors are on a mission. If things don't go up 20, 40, 50, 60, 100, 200, 300, 400%, it's not interesting anymore. So I think Arb is probably going to go up from its current position, because it's mining the coins. It's going to have a value, I would imagine, based on Bitcoin going up in value, and it's mining and it's holding the coins and so on and so forth. But I think people in the crypto space just don't see it as exciting. It's gone from 10p to, what was it, £3? And now it's come back to 160 or whatever it is. It's not exciting. And it's rainbow chases. People are chasing rainbows every day. It's like, if it's not doing 50 or 100%, forget it. I'm not interested. So I see there's a lot of that about, and a lot of money chasing a small number of stocks. And when it's in fashion, if you like, boom, it goes. But just as it goes, it comes back down again, you know. Everything that goes up must come down, you know. And I think that's what's happened anyway. I think 100% sure, but
I think the attitude to trading has changed in the last, you know, 6 months, let's say, where, you know, we see a good rise on a share. It's very rare that any rise isn't sold into within, whether that be an hour or 2 hours or even kind of a couple of weeks. We saw it a bit on MHC, didn't we? We saw a really nice rise up to what sort of the seven point five or whatever it was, or over the 7 pence mark. And then all of a sudden, you know, a week later, it sat back down at the, you know, people are selling at 5.152s, and you think, you know, that's a significant drop. And, you know, obviously for the people that bought in on the 7 range, that they're sat nursing a bit of a sore head. But, and again, it comes to Albert's thing, doesn't it? You know, patience, hold, believe in the company, we'll get the news. Nothing goes up in a straight line, and you will see some retraces and consolidation along the way. But people don't, they you know, they'll panic, they'll sell at a loss, and they'll think, oh, I'll try and make that 20% that I lost or that I didn't have in that, you know, that I'm down in something else. And in reality is very rarely do they actually make those losses back up, or, you know, they'll back up in a short time, like jumping into the next, you know, promised multi-bagger, and then they end up doing the same again. So you can see how these novice investors can seriously lose money on these investments.
Isn't it the case that 90% of people, 99% of people, they trade too big and they don't stay in long enough? If you stay in a long time, the longer you stay in a position, by logic, when you win, you're going to win a massive amount. And you've got to have a position which is not too hairy or too leveraged for you to be able to hold on a long time. Yeah. So you put in £5,000, because £5,000 you know, is not a lot of money, and you buy it at 2p or 3p, and you just stay in there, because you can't really, there's no point getting out unless you get 10p out of it. So you've got to stay really for 20p, 30p, 50p. Like a dev situation, if you're in dev at 5p with £5,000, well, now you're sitting on £30,000 or £35,000. Makes sense.
Of course. And you're right. But there comes a point where I think a lot of investors don't cut the losing positions and run. And actually, sometimes it is better to do that. You know, if a stock's been there for 2 or 3 years and you feel like it's going nowhere, sometimes if you can get out even with a, you know, 40% of your original investment and then put it elsewhere, sometimes, you know, it's a bit like Kev said, sometimes it's liberating to cut a position because you feel like you've got a noose around your neck and you've been sat there for so long, and it just frustrates you, doesn't it? Looking in and seeing it down. I mean, I've done it a few positions that I just feel have not got much hope these days. Some of the SPAC stuff, and I just think, you know, it feels better to have it move it elsewhere. So you could say, well, you've just contradicted yourself because you said that you shouldn't panic and sell out, but actually sometimes you do spot the companies that really don't have much hope.
So I mean, but isn't the most successful investor will invest in something and at a low, you know, the 1, 2p, 3p or whatever it is, like Webis, I was saying, it's just come back down a bit, and Fragrant, whatever it is, it's got, you know, it's for 5p 6p, one of those. You just go in there with £5,000 or £3,000 or £1,000, whatever you're comfortable with. My risk is the whole amount of money.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to get out. They're going to do a deal, and I'm going to be in the deal in the stock when they've done the deal.
Yeah. I think there are some of those are real, what I call conviction plays, where you literally, you believe in the company, you believe in the board, you believe in the due diligence that you've put in yourself, and you just hold them. You know, you think that there's a massive upside in the company and that they're undervalued. Definitely. I think Rambler comes into that. You know, Kevin's been buying and buying and buying, and that for him was a real conviction play. It has been one that he knew was, it was only a matter of time before, once the overhang and churn was cleared, it went, and it proved as right, or both of us, because we're both in it, but, you know, he's got a much bigger position, and it proved him right this week. So and it will only continue to move. You know, that's just my, it's a conviction play for me. So those ones
with that stock, for instance, when you guys talked about it, I thought, my God, these people are literally, they're mad. I'm going to turn the mic off or, you know, whatever. It was that crazy. It'll never move up. But the thing with Rambler was at 0.23, 0.24, whatever it was, you put your notional, you know, token amount, the $5,000 or whatever it is, and you just say, well, if that company goes bust now, well, that's $5,000 gone. But if I make it, it's going to be 50, or it could be any amount. I mean, that company could be there in 10 years' time, and you're looking at I don't know what it does. It's copper, is that you could be looking, not Antofagasta, but you're looking at a decent company. So isn't it more the downside and just be risking the whole? Your risk is the whole amount, like Eurasia at 0.36 or whatever Albert was in there. He puts his $2,000 or $3,000 or $1,000, even if you put a grand in, you'd be laughing now. But he was happy to lose a lot. And so you believe in it, in a situation enough that you're happy to lose a lot. And if you're happy to lose a lot, you've got the full upside. You'll be there for the full upside.
But honestly, with things like Rambler Metals, you were never going to lose the lot, because the mine itself, to sell it, was going to probably be worth still more, twice what the market cap's worth today. Yeah, the mine, the mining's £100 million.
Yeah, the other thing is that they'd raised enough money so that you could never lose a lot, because they had the money. On the second raise, there was no way that the notional, you know, Zach's $5,000 was going to be a zero, because they had cash in the bank. So that's the way it looks like. It's not just trying to stack up the upside. It's actually trying to eliminate any doubts on the downside. And that's why, if you'd said that though 2 weeks ago, I would have bought the shares, because you would have reassured me that whatever money I put in there, it was not going to be a zero. But I think it should be the whole amount that you're risking, not like you go in and you get out of half because you got belt bored or whatever it is.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, Zach. Maybe it's for these small miners and the what we call the speculative punts, maybe it is a good idea that you just put in at 500 or 1,000 or, you know, relatively small position in there and just write the amount off as that. You know, imagine it as a really good, like you go to the, you've had a good win, you've taken some profit out of a good share, so you've had a good week on the markets. You think, right, I've got a grand to play with. Effectively, it's like being at the races. You go with your mates, you win on the first horse, and you go big on the next one. You bank, I can afford to lose that. I'm going to go 500 on, you know, whatever, you know, Red Rum. That's showing me age. That's a really old horse. And there you win again, and then you go bigger and bigger. So I think that's a really good point. Is, you know, Albert probably did it with EUA. He started off with a small amount, and he just rode it all the way up to, I think he said he almost 60 bagged or 50 bagged on it.
The other way of looking at it is, if you've done your due diligence, you really think this one's going to happen, then you buy, and then if it goes down, you buy some more. And if it goes down again, you buy some more. And then as it starts to grow, you're going to do very well.
Yeah, but with that strategy, there can be some situations which they are a duster, they are a disaster. And the strategy of buying more as it goes up, with a starting off very small, avoids you, you know, buying into, I'm trying to think of a stock which got suspended and never came back, but buying into something, I'm sure you can come up with one or two examples, it stops you getting totally destroyed on something which it turns out.
Again, this comes down to positions as well, doesn't it? I mean, I've now strictly said I will have 8 positions, 5, if you like, life-changing ones, and 3 that have good potential. So I have 5 stocks now that they're the ones I've done my research. I'm saying, if the opportunity comes, I will buy more. If the opportunity comes that they're going to go up, I may slice a little bit and regurgitate into the 5 that I have. Maybe that 5 will change. I mean, for instance, Simi was one of those 5, and then halas, I cut it. So another one had to replace it. And that was me increasing Rambler. So because of Simi, I increased Rambler by 7 million shares. And also made MHC, my health check, one of my 5. Even though it's gone down this week, I see huge potential
So for next week, I've got my, well, I've actually started my position today, or last couple of days. It's a company called, it's the ticker's CMRS. It's Caerus Minerals. I don't know how you pronounce it. C-A-E-R-U-S, Caerus Minerals. And they're basically a recent listed on the main official list, so the main market listed. And they've raised circa £2.25 million. And they are a gold and copper miner in the safe jurisdiction within Cyprus. So, you know, basically they're involved in a lot of the old shuttered and the old mines that were actually processing in the 70s and 80s. And there's a stat out there that says they have actually got half of the former producing mines in Cyprus. Okay. So it's a kind of compelling story. And the board of directors that are involved have got some extremely good experience, well-connected board of directors within the, within the mining space. So one of the guys is ex Rio Tinto, and he's actually still on the Rio Tinto advisory board. And another gentleman who's the CEO is ex Nyota Minerals. And that's obviously going to carry a lot of weight with the project. So they're obviously very early stage. They've done due diligence and they've started to do some drilling and sampling on the ground. And they've discovered a lot of the visible gold, basically, first hole, very close to the surface. It's a nice result. And if it's anything, I don't know if any of you know the other company, there's a company already out there called Chesterfield Resources, CHF. They've done very well recently. And they're obviously, they're in a very similar area. They're Cypriot based. So that's one that I'm starting to build a position in. I think that valued around the, I think they're around the 6 million market cap. Not many shares in issue. There's a lot of institutions on board and the directors also hold a large number of the shares. So it's highly liquid, but the fact it's on the main market and they're also fully funded for 18 months as well. So that from the initial IPO, they obviously generated a lot of cash, 2.25 million, 6 million cap. It's massively undervalued, and I think with the encouraging results you've seen so far with the visible gold at surface, it can only go on from there. So that's my tip of the week. Now, obviously, if it's as good as Valerium was last week, I'll be talking very happy next week. But we shall see what next week brings, I guess.
If it does a Valerium, I will cry. Okay. MHC, I've already said it. This is my one for next week and maybe the next few months. There's going to be huge amounts of testing. There's only so many people who can do the right PCR tests that have been government approved. So they're going to get the deals. Based on Boots alone, selling something like, I don't remember, it was like one per store. We're somewhere in the region of 15 to 20 pence share price is about right. And more like 4 or 5 a store per day. You're talking around 50 pence. And yeah, we finished the day 5.1. So it's just like, why not? It's crazy. Okay. Now there's going to be a section on here every week now called What About Life? Okay. The reason being, because one of the guys put me up to it in our share group. I run a charity over here that basically we're trying to generate a school for people less privileged, can't get the education, et cetera, et cetera. So people have said that if life gets to 10p, which is where the warrants come in, or the accelerated warrants come in, then they will pledge to give me money. So now I have to talk about life every single week. I'm sorry.
And I will say, Kev, I'm one of those persons that actually pledged as well. So
yes, Phil is. So far, £5,500 pledged. Okay. Which is wow. We could do with between £10,000 and £20,000 if it happens.
And that's just mine.
So
And that's just my pledge.
That's just Phil. He doesn't know he's just increased his pledge by 4,500 there, but he has. Anyway, so basically, if you would like to pledge, then please pledge. You can see my, I'm on Telegram, or you can send me a message on kevinhornsby@hotmail.com. And yes, today's announcement is that life is currently at about 3.98 pence. We've had a raise of £7 million. We've got good progress going on, and lots of things going to happen over the next while with UFC deal and more stuff coming online. So now what we're going to say is that thank you. You don't have to do it if you don't want to. If you do, it'd be much appreciated. My health check's going to be my health check. It's going to be wonderful.
We need to get Penny on one week, don't we? We need to get Penny McCormack on. I keep trying to reach out to her, but she doesn't respond to my messages. Now, you could argue, well, most people wouldn't, you know. It's it could almost be stalker-esque. But you know what, Penny, if you're listening, please come on and have a chat with the lads. It's not.
Are you sure you got the right email?
Well, it might not be. I think it was Jesus Loves a Trier or something. I don't know what it was. Maybe I got.
I think
the wrong
it was
one.
A bit more disparaging than that. But was,
yeah. just cold caller, cold call.
Yeah, I've got. I've got
the telltales off.
I did send... to give you Albert, what number. About next week? Have you just taken a breath?
So next week,
let's see this lady. I want to see what she looks like.
Oh, she's eating some cheese in front of me. She's beautiful, very beautiful.
She's easy on the eye.
Very easy on the eye, yes.
Okay, well,
but she's lovely. Lovely
heart,
personality as well. Yeah, so next week for me, I'm a bit SPAC-minded at the minute, which means I think that some of these SPACs out there, the smaller caps, just keep loading profits into them for the potential hit and hope that you're going to make a lot of money. In bio, I'm very heavily invested in bio at the minute, so I don't want any more. I think SNG is bubbling away there and looking good. Big TR1 in yesterday, 5% position taken. I think SNG is going to be amazing because it's the best antiviral, not anti-inflammatory drug on the market. There's a big difference between the two. And it's self-administered potentially. So you could see SNG, I think the Numis broker note has got a £9 target on it right now. And if they get, and then they're in Operation Warp Speed, if they get, you know, FDA expedited approval, you're going to see NCYT2, but bigger. So I'm fully loaded in it and I've held it. It's gone up and down for a long time, but it's getting to the point now where with the COVID stocks, SNG with the antiviral, and not only is it antiviral, what it also means is it's not intravenous. You could get it posted by Amazon. You can take it potentially before you've got the virus and while you've got the virus without going to a hospital. That's a game changer for this COVID situation we're in. And it looks really, really promising. So my eyes are on probably SNG over the next couple of weeks. I know that it might be 2 or 3 months before things get flowing in America, but SNG is where I've got my eyes at the minute.
Okay, well, we'll go with that. And thank you, Albert. Thank you, Kevin. And thank you, Phil. It's been an eventful week. And we'll see you and regroup the same time next week.
So, Zach, just before we go, what's your call for next week?
I think I was most impressed with the hope, which is my own hope, that the FTSE breaking through 7,000 will lead the market higher. I expect it to be as high as 7,600 by the end of next month. So that's a punchy call. And it's one of those situations that it's almost like the market wants you to give up on it. And when it's like that, it's normally a buy, not a sell. It's the market trying to shake people out ahead of a move up, not actually looking weak. When the market's going down, it doesn't give you any notice, it just goes down. And I think that's probably what all of you know, or we probably know enough about that over the years. This is, I think, a shakeout of weak bulls or impatient bulls ahead of a new move to the upside. But we've already broken 7,000 and, you know, really it was 6,800, which was the level. And so it's that's a stealth rally that we've got. Hopefully I'll be right on that assessment and eventually it'll filter through to the smaller companies. But my concern is, I suppose, people are like with, you know, with Dogecoin, you know, they've doubled their money overnight. why would you want to be in a boring stock market? That's the thing, you know, and that's certainly a point that needs to be answered. The other concern, I suppose, was Argo blockchain, where, you know, you saw Bitcoin fall by like 2% and that stock fell by 25%. That doesn't make any sense either. So there must be something going on there. It'd be good to know what it is. On that note, thank you to all the lads. Thank you to Richard Polden, CEO at Wishbone Gold and chairman of Valerian Blockchain. Really was a very insightful presentation, as he normally does anyway, in all other places. But great stuff here, and see you next time.
Bye-bye.
Thanks a lot, everyone. Cheers. Sorry, I've not been super engaged. I've got this beautiful jasmine in front of me. We're eating cheese and chorizo at the minute. So
that one's definitely going in the roast. Keep it recording.
You are. You know how to woo a lady, I tell you. A bit of cheese and chorizo, mate, on a first date. What is the word?
Hey, this is the appetizer, mate.
Hey. I'm not going to ask what's for second.
I'm only joking.
Not warm apple pie, is it next?
Hey. Good night, gents. Good night.
He's got
thank
cheese
you.
And chorizo. Right. That's a sausage.
Have a good weekend.
And,
see you later.
Cheers. Something else.
Thank you for listening. Remember to visit our website for more news and other podcasts at www.share-talk.com.